Welcome to the Awakening Conversations podcast, where we dive into the many aspects, challenges, and life-changing lessons that are part of our spiritual awakenings. Through conversations, we are looking to bring you wisdom and perspectives so that you feel more supported and connected as you navigate your own awakening path. We are your hosts, Kate McGee and Amanda Richardson-Meyer. We've both been through our own unique awakening journeys that have changed and transformed our lives. And through these awakening conversations, we will be growing and expanding alongside you. We're so glad to have you join us. Let's dive in. Welcome back to the Awakening Conversations podcast. My name is Kate and I'm here with my co-host Amanda. And today we are talking about discernment and how the current times are literally a discernment bootcamp for us as we go through this mass awakening and shift in consciousness. The current times that we're moving through really may feel very overwhelming, but it is actually a powerful training ground. Truth is shifting fast, narratives are colliding, and illusions are beginning to dissolve. And in the midst of all of that, we are being asked to question, can we stay grounded in our inner knowing? Can we pause before reacting and sense the energetic tone of what we're consuming and choose alignment over fear? This is how we begin to build sovereignty, one moment of discernment at a time. You know, I think about all the things that I hear people talk about. I've had a lot of conversations recently with lots of different people from around the world. A lot of my friends live in other countries than me. And really what their experiences are being or experiences are of what we're going through, what we're seeing playing out in a particular country's government that's really affecting the world. And, you know, I have a husband who likes to read the news and tell me stories. And I'm like, okay, how much of that is the actual picture? Discernment really, really is something that is such a powerful skill to build. And we're going to talk about actually how to begin to really tap into and build this muscle of discernment, why that's important. So, Amanda, I want to start with talking about our own experiences with media, social media, and information out in the world and how we've both come to see that things may not be quite as they seem. The things that we are told, what's been shared with us may not be the whole truth. And I think really to start this conversation, we can agree that anything that we see in the media, social media, is maybe may contain a slither of the truth. But in most parts, it is someone's perspective and angle, just a tiny piece of a story. Otherwise, it is maybe just purely a story that is being created to evoke a certain reaction or a pathway or feelings of fear, especially this current age that we're moving through. And this for me really was something that opened, I can't remember what year it was, but I'm going to say it was probably back in 2009, 2010. I can't remember the exact year, but it was the Arab Spring. We lived in Dubai. Ricky lived in Cairo, was working in Cairo. And they had the uprising that happened in Egypt. And on the news, it looked like Cairo was literally on fire, that buildings were just being torched and there were riots in all the streets. And it was like, do not go there. It is, you know, chaos, absolute chaos. Ricky worked there, as I said, and I used to go there once a month. He worked 8 weeks on the job, 1 week off. So in that 8 week period, I'd go there after 4 weeks and then he'd come home. And so I went to Cairo in the middle of this uprising and this, you know, what seemed to be extremely dangerous time to be in Cairo. And the truth was that all of the protests and the rioting were happening in this one central location in the middle of town called Tahrir Square. And yes, you probably didn't want to drive through Tahrir Square, but it was like a pinhead in the middle of a very large city. And so I arrived and I got off the plane and I was picked up and we drove around Tahrir Square and we went to his hotel and life was as normal. We had, you know, several trips during that time where my family came to visit and we sightsaw and went to places, and it was not the scene that the media was portraying. And, you know, even when I took my mum there during that time, she's like, do you think we should go? All of these things are happening. And I'm like, well, that's what the news is saying, but that's not the reality of what's going on here. And it was really quite eye-opening for me to see how fear-mongering and, you know, this story and this, you know, provocative sensationalism that the media were truly aiming for, when the reality was that life was just going on as normal. And yes, there was a riot happening downtown that did change things for Cairo, but it wasn't this war zone that was portrayed on the media. And so that to me was just like a kind of slap in the face. And it made me think, well, what else am I shown when I watch the news? That is literally just a scene that happened down the end of that street. And yet they're saying this culture, these people, this place is X, Y, and Z, and this is what's happening. And we just buy that and gobble it up and be like, oh my God, that's what those people are like, or that's what that place is like. So that was my first experience with seeing how a picture is being painted, fear is being incited in some senses, and, you know, this aim of sensationalism, like, okay, grabs your attention, right? That's what it's for. But, you know, that's a discredit to the rest of the city and the country of Egypt that then suffered because of that narrative, because people stopped going.
Yeah, that's a really good example. And how my awakening, you know, there's been various levels of it with regards to truth, who is controlling the truth, what are they using, quote, truth in quotation marks, what are they using it for, is when we start to see that there's this big utilization of an event happening, and it's used to push something forward. And then when we see that what they've created is not true, then we have to start questioning everything going back and everything going forward. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a concept of a false flag, right? That's the concept of something happening. Maybe they let it happen. Maybe it's intentionally created to rally public sentiment around an action that power structure wants to take. And I can think of many, many instances of that. And so we have to start paying attention to our emotions. And I feel myself, once I've started to recognize the signature of such a manipulation, I can recognize it happening. A lot of times it's like I wake up and it's everywhere. It's on every Before social media, it was like on every news outlet. And now social media, it's like, you know, they push it to all the people that are going to spread it, and it's everywhere. And then, let's put this picture in our bio and let's support this issue. And it's like a campaign almost to rally people behind, quote unquote, a cause to curry favor for doing something. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that I think a big one for me was 9/11 and everything that surrounded that. I mean, I remember I knew nothing about politics. I was 19 at the time. Let's say 2001. Yeah, I was 19 at the time. And I remember I had slept in and I woke up and I got up and they're like, oh, the Twin Towers are hit. And I'll just say I was ignorant. I didn't even know what the Twin Towers were. I'd never been to New York City. I mean, I'd heard of them, but the significance of them. And so I just paid attention to what's just my intuition. Like, how does this feel? Like, what's happening? And then just like observing over the course of, that was like 2 years, actually a year and a half, from 9/11 happening to then going to war with Iraq. And it was like, oh, there's weapons of mass destruction. And despite I didn't watch the news really, I mean, I'd pick it up from all different angles, but it's not something that I wasn't like a politics buff or anything like that. I mean, I'm more into it now than I used to as far as seeing how it all works. But back then I was pretty oblivious, but I just knew, I'm like, there aren't any weapons of mass destruction. They're using this to get us to go to war. And I think if you pay attention, not to what people say, but to the energy behind, and I think I was doing this unconsciously at the time, there was incongruency with their words, and maybe truths, like the facts would change over time and there would be no realignment or explanation of why these facts changed over time. And so my point being is that we have to start, I imagine many people are already doing this, but paying attention to how congruent these organizations are with what they're saying. And, you know, are we for violence? Like, do our actions demonstrate that we're for violence when it benefits us, but we're really anti-violence when there's like a benefit for us? It's like we're using certain issues for our favor, but we're not consistent upon with them. And so I guess my point being is, like, as we start to observe and as we begin to see that things aren't always lining up, then we have to start questioning the sources. And I think a lot of people mistrust the main, you know, there's just like this awakening after awakening of people beginning to see the man behind the curtain, you know, the Wizard of Oz, the illusion of these truth tellers, or the holders of the truth that we used to believe because we didn't have any other alternative sources for news, or maybe there were, but they were like they don't have the platforms that they have today with the internet, that we have, you know, YouTube, and we have a lot of other alternative sources that can share news, and news can spread much more alternative sources of news. And so bringing back, I think people are beginning to, or have begun, this is a process that's been, you know, in 2020 really kicked the hornet's nest in terms of disturbing that stranglehold that the media has, the mainstream media has, over the authority of what is truth. And it's kind of like, once you see that one thing, you see the Arab Spring. Like, for me, it's like starting to see that someone's being smeared, and then I actually go and I never listened to them before, and then I actually will go and listen to them and what's being said about them versus what they actually said. Are they painted a whole different story? And then I'm like, okay, who else are they doing this with now? I have to go listen to what they say now, because I can't trust what the mainstream is saying. And so it's really this erosion of trust that has, there's always been this lying happening, this manipulation happening, but people are beginning to see it. And it's like, once you violate someone's trust, a person's trust, it's really hard to get it back. And so where I'm going with this is, I think that we're moving more towards authenticity in terms of where we really need to trust who we're getting our sources from. And with that, we really need to trust ourselves more and trust our read, all the various things, all the information that we're taking in. It's like, we really have to go inside and see what the energy read is telling us versus, this source is a reliable source because they've always been a reliable source. That's what this meme tells me. This meme tells me that these are the reliable sources. So therefore, this is who I listen to. And I think those days are starting to end. There are still people who seek their information that way, but I think there's a larger group of people that are starting to trust themselves more and being a judge of who has character, who's truthful, who's honest, and who has integrity in the information that they're sharing.
Yeah. A couple of things that you said there. I'm reading a book at the moment called The Tipping Point. I think he's Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he talks about epidemics, as in idea epidemics, you know, and that example that you gave there of, here's a cause, let's put this like circle around our profile photo, and then that spreads through, especially now social media these days. And, you know, it's an experiment to see how can we push this idea and like enough people get on board. And I think whenever I see that sort of thing, I always have been someone who is not jumping on bandwagons. You know, a silly example of that is when it comes to fashion and fashion trends. If I'm going to tap into something that's trendy, it'll be like just before it becomes untrendy, because I want to sit back and watch it. And like, you know, when the next thing comes in, like, I'm an observer. I sit back and take it all in. I'm like, is that for me? You know, and I think that I fortunately approach everything like that. It's like when I hear or see things like that, I'm like, okay, wait a second. People are so quick to react. Have you stopped to think about what you're reacting to? Do you really understand what it is you're behind? Or have you just been caught in the emotion of and the, you know, the story, and not to negate any horrible things that happen and not showing your support? Or that's not what I'm trying to say here. It's just that I really do feel like, especially that we see that so often on social media, is just this, it feels to me just, oh, this is what we're doing now. We're showing our support for this. We're putting up a black page, or we're, I'm putting this circle around. Not, that was a, not a bad thing. I'm not, no judgments here, right? Just the examples that are coming to my mind, this circle around my profile photo. But have you stopped to really think about what you're saying? Do you really know what you're aligning to? Like, does that align with your values? Have you questioned it? Have you looked at this from all angles? And it's, it does, it feels to me like wildfire. And I do, I just sit back and I'm like, I even watch how people pressure each other to be part of these things. And it's like, well, no, you're allowed to have discernment. You're allowed to stop and question. You're allowed to seek more information. And I think, you know, when we're talking about discernment, the opposite of that is this reactivity, you know, because we're just like, oh my God, that's terrible. We should do this. And we jump on the bandwagon. And yet discernment really is, first and foremost, is that questioning. You know, that's what our awakenings are really propelling, or, you know, bringing up in this, is this questioning. We have these experiences that just make reality that we thought we were living in not what it is. And so we've got this beautiful gift from our awakening that we're going to question. We want to do that more, you know. So first and foremost, with our discernment, it is to ask the question, what else is here, right? For me, as I said, with that experience in Cairo, like, it was this tiny bit of the picture, right? And so if anything I'm seeing is the tiniest part of that picture, what's the other 99%, right? This is a sliver of that reality. And I think it is, again, as I said, for me, it's like the stepping back and observing and like watching. How can you create some distance from the thing that you're, you know, having shoved in your face, a story or a bandwagon, people asking you to jump on, or in a narrative or a side? Can you step back and like kind of watch the players in the show? Like, you know, there's always some loud voice trying to like pull you this way. Can you stand back on the edge of that crowd and kind of watch what happens to really, as you said, begin to sense and feel in our own physical bodies? What feels right here? What feels like an influence? Where do I feel or notice even my mind or my emotions being pulled in a certain way? Can I step back and like be aware of that and then ask myself, is that a direction I want to follow? Does that feel true for me? And it's such a powerful question. Does this feel true for me? And it's so okay if it doesn't and it goes against, you know, all of the people in your family, all the people in your community. And, you know, we have to learn to have that sovereignty over our own intuitive feelings, our own intuitive knowing, and be willing to be different until we are able to gather a greater understanding and of what's happening, to come to our position. And our positions can be completely different from everyone else's if we're following our truth. And I mean, really, that's what discernment is. And I think too, it's a practice of, when we've got that stepping back, how can I see more sides of this? Like I said, there's the 1% we're shown. And what's the other 99%? Are we willing to look at all the different angles? Are we willing to change our own position as well? Like, if we're holding on to ideas and beliefs as well as rigid and this is right and wrong, we are missing so much more of the picture and we're not in discernment. You know, I think if we're staking a claim that this is right and this is wrong, we're rigid, we're stuck, we've chosen a slice of the reality. You know, there's a sense of flexibility that comes with discernment and a willingness to move your position as you learn more. And then I'll say one other thing too, with that felt sense, you know, when we trust that and we use that, very often that is then within the mass hysteria, or whatever we want to call it, situation, narrative, taking that outer stance is then that you are, you know, you're on the fringe. You might be labeled in some way, something like conspiracy theorist, or you know, woo-woo.
All
again,
the negative terms right? thrown around regularly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. To discredit you and stop you from trusting that inner knowing that bucks the mainstream narratives or the story that's being told.
Yeah, continuing with that, it's, well, who, for those that question, are people allowed to question, or are they shut down? Are legitimate requests for evidence or trying to look at it from other angles, is this silenced with various tactics like calling people names or not giving voice in the various mainstream platforms? You know, ask yourself, why aren't we allowed to see another perspective? What's dangerous about that perspective? And then as you're saying, it's like, is fear, shame, are those tactics used to perpetuate a certain narrative? I think a lot of these issues that are pushed, you know, we get the emotion, you know, people get painted a story up front with, a lot of times there's holes in the story, but it's very emotionally driven and it's really meant to capitalize on people's good natured desire to be good natured. And then it's like, let's push this story first. And that's what most people remember. And because most people are busy, they're not following these stories beyond the initial campaign. And so, yes, things are going to come out later on. This is how I've observed it to happen, at least, where it's like things come out, you know, weeks, months down the road that the original story was not actually a truthful story. I can say, oh, it's with information we had at the time. But it's a very common formula or strategy that's used because they know that if enough people repeat the story over and over and over again, that's imprinting it in people's minds. And then so when someone questions, it's like, no, I know what the truth is. Like I see this on social media all the time. It's like, well, this happened. And it's like they're operating off the story that came out right off the bat. They didn't follow it up. Like they didn't see all the other information that came out over the course of weeks and months to demonstrate that that was not actually true, but it cemented, it created a story and people perpetuate that story. And that becomes almost, I see it happening like of stories that are years old. People are still telling the story like, that's totally been discredited, but people, seemingly educated people, still repeat the same thing. And so, it's a strategy that's used and why? And it's why is this even being done? You know, I really think that it's meant to, if we are in a constant fear state, if we're constantly triggered and upset and fixated on the latest fear porn, for lack of better, you know, what the fear story of the day, we're not creating anything. We're just in this lower vibrational state and we're being easily manipulated. We're not in a place of where we are envisioning and playing a part in creating what's going to replace this old model. And so the longer that we stay plugged into this fear cycle, it feeds that frequency. It feeds the things that we actually want to improve, all the war, all the conflict, all the really negative things that are happening by us being in that state, which they are impacting through these campaigns, like we're perpetuating it. And so why seeing through this is really important is like when something comes through our social media, when something comes through the news, hopefully people are starting to not watch the news if they haven't already. How is it making you feel? And are you asking like, why, what is the point of the story? Why am I being shown this? Who benefits from this? You know, who's, do you know the person that is delivering the story? Like, what is their track record? Most of the time, if you're just consuming news off of like some random, some big, you know, publication, some big mainstream publication or some like online news, it's like, it's just someone that's being told to write this thing versus Is it someone that's built up a reputation? They have their own audience and they have a relationship with their audience. For me, I see that as a sign of greater trustworthiness. Mm-hmm. If someone has built up their own brand, I mean, obviously there's nuance to this as well, but they have more to lose by being dishonest and by lying to their audience. And so because it's their name and it's their reputation and they can only lie or be inauthentic for so long before people stop listening to them. And so I think the days of people being protected by big institutions and just doing the bidding of big institutions, those days are dwindling as people are really wanting to know who is giving them information and wanting to know that these are integral people that have, they're not perfect. No one's going to be perfect in this like quest for doing their jobs. They're going to have flaws, but can they admit to like when, if they get a story wrong, can they admit to that? Can they change their perspective when new information is presented to them? Are they beholden to a particular political party or other individuals? You know, they can't, if new information about, say, a person comes in, can they change their stance on that person? And to me, that indicates someone who's really curious and really seeking truth. Like, I think that's what we're after. Like, we want to know what the truth is. And so those that the truth is what's guiding them, they might not always get it right because we always have our biases and our own perspectives, but is truth seeking what's guiding them and pushing them, the motive behind their work?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what to say to all of that.
Okay.
That was awesome. I was just looking at like some of these other things that we had here, like just because what you said was awesome, but I don't know where to go with that. Do we want to talk about like why the truth, the acceleration of truth, why it is accelerating now? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And I think too, when it comes to truth, my own personal experience has been a craving of that. And I think our collective awakening is more and more within us activating like a, it's almost like an alarm system. I feel like an inner alarm system. And, you know, that's my experience, like more and more this sense that something's not right. And I think that in and of itself is a powerful question for people to consider when it comes up for them. Something doesn't feel right. Okay, what do I want to do about this? You know, truth is accelerating, as we said, and why that is because of this collective awakening that we're going through. And I think too, because so much is changing so fast that, I don't know, what was I going to say with that?
But,
I think, yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you go.
I think it comes back to how you started the episode with that this is a training ground essentially for our discernment. And so because truth is accelerating so rapidly, it's like we have the opportunity in like real time to practice our discernment and really test out how we feel when we hear people share things, or so we can read people differently. We can see how things land, and because things are like, you know, what's true was true 6 months ago and what's truth now, the revelations, what truth is changing so rapidly that we can say like, oh, I felt this way when I heard that, I thought it was this and it ended up being that. And so it's like we get this confirmation in real, like almost in real time to help us see like, oh, when you have that sense, that's truth.
Yeah.
When you have this sense of something's off and then you find out, okay, yes, that person ended up being exposed as being this person that is not a truth teller, or they have connections or whatever. You can, it's like this cultivation of the muscle of knowing. And so that's, I think really that's what this all is for. Like if we zoom out and look down at it, it's really this opportunity for us to become the internal compass. So regardless of, so we can take in information from all these different sources and, you know, what is like create these maps of what truth is. Like this person over here is saying this, this person's over here saying this. I can look at people on like different places of politics and see like what are the commonalities, what are the what things align, and so we have, we can listen to a lot more people, we can, and then we can trust that, you know, sometimes a person's on and maybe in another time we don't always have to guruize people or put people on pedestals and like, oh, this person's always right. It's like, mm-hmm. we can, with our own internal barometer system, we can on a case by case basis be like, well, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
And I can, yeah. it's okay if I disagree with this person on this issue, and we become much more confident in how we perceive things.
Yeah. And some other practices, like as we're navigating like these shifting truths, is embracing the I don't know space. Humility is a portal to higher truth. And I have made it actually a habit for me to honestly be like, you know what? I don't know. Not feel like I have to have the answers to everything. And when we do embrace the I don't know, like we're open to receiving more information. We don't just decide, well, based on what I've got, I'm going to pick this lane, and then that's going to be the truth of the day or what I follow or where I align myself to. When we are able to say, well, you know what, I don't know, we're going to then take on that process of, well, what else do I need to learn? What more is here? What more can I understand? And then exactly as you say, it's that zoom out of, well, what else is there to this? Where is this coming from? How does this align to an ideology or a narrative or like someone's desire to create something in the world? And, you know, that powerful statement of like, well, follow the money, you know, that we've seen in current times is like such a powerful question to ask. Like, can we follow the money? Where is this going? Who does this benefit from us, you know, following this line of thinking? It's a, you know, we can also like anchor into our own values and that embodied knowing as our internal compass. And I think values is something that we're never taught it. We don't really ever have this opportunity to consider what our values are and then why things feel a certain way. You know, as my understanding is we're riled up because our values are in conflict. The thing that's happening out in the world is a direct conflict with the value that we hold. And the world that we want to create, this new earth that we want to create, is going to come down to the values that we hold. And being able to see that in the people that we really are allowing to give, you know, that's truth to, our decision of what to follow is going to be when we're aligning and knowing and living our own values as well. You know, so much of what I think we see out there that does make us question is because it does. It's direct conflict of true human values that, you know, when we live them and embody them, create a world that's very different to greed and power and money and war, etc. And staying curious, right? Letting go of the need to be right. Again, that's just a pigeonholing, like you've closed yourself off. Something I remember a teacher saying at, I think it was a yoga teacher training, like just because you become a yoga teacher, never stop being the student. Because the minute you're the teacher, you stop learning, you know, like it's that same thing. You know, I've become the teacher. I'm right. I know what it is. You now closed off and then you've limited your own growth. Being curious and staying open to, you know, a flexibility within your own position as new and more information comes in, you're going to then have that broader world view and be willing to see things for as they really are rather than, no, this is my idea of what the world is and it can only be like this. And so therefore blindly following a path, be willing to change your position and that there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you haven't failed or anything like that. And again, something that I always say is like taking breaks from information, especially social media, right? Like as we've said many times on this podcast, just don't watch the news full stop. And then, you know, what are you feeding yourself? You know, and it's something that we, you know, we're chatting about before, like truth arises in stillness, not in scrolls. For me, you know, I see this play out in my own life. Like when we are constantly plugged into media or social media, we're mental. We're in our minds, right? Mm-hmm. That's where the worst case scenarios of things live. That's where our fear is. We unplug that. And I always have these cravings or, you know, this idealistic view. Imagine if we didn't have TV and if we didn't have social media, like imagine being so in your life, just interacting with the humans and the environment. Like, can you imagine how good your life would be without all that external noise, right? It'd be a very, very different world. We'd be very, very different people. We probably wouldn't hate so much and have all of this, you know, stuff being fed to us to think all these other things. So unplugging, that's a powerful choice we can make to discover the truth that's within, to come back to what's really right for me within this world of like being bombarded with stories and points of view or sides that seem to be in our face so often.
Yeah, a lot of good things you said in there. I want to go back to what you said at the beginning about I don't know. Mm. I think that it's very liberating to come at life from a place of I don't know and recognizing that there is more that we don't know as a human species than what we do know. Mm. And that just means like there's so much opportunity to be curious and it frees us from the need to be right. And what it also makes me think of is how different this is than how the institutions operate, right? It's like school, we learn there's a certain set of facts and our government says there's a certain way of whether it's eating or doing health or, you know, the economy, like there's certain truths that we really hold on to really strongly. And I think those beliefs are what hold up those structures. And so it's very important for those institutions to really not allow people or not encourage people to believe that there's a lot that they don't actually know, right? And so I think, you know, that creates a humbleness that I think is lacking in, we'll say, the education system, where it's like, this is the way things are done. This is the way, this is the history, right? Whereas, you know, if you start looking, you know, reading a lot of books and seeing like, okay, there's this other version of history and that's not the version of history we learned in school. And so I think if we operate from this perspective of, I don't know, it's so much easier to allow new information to come in, not be attached to rigid ways of things, not needing to argue with people about how things are. I think as people are beginning to open up to more truths, more truths than what we are told by our authorities, I think the more that the institutions hold on tightly to the rules or how we need to see something, it's like in a way exposing them. It's actually waking people up more quickly because people are seeing through the stories that aren't really holding up. And so, yeah, I think that's just a liberating way to live. And it makes life so much easier as we do navigate these times where things are changing so quickly. And, you know, if we try to like grasp on to something, it's like when we grasp on it, it's like falling through our fingers. And, yeah. And it makes this ride, this chaotic ride that we're on, a lot more enjoyable because it's like, okay, this new thing is how things are. Well, you don't need to get too attached to it because it's probably going to change like before you realize it. And so just kind of get good, not really needing to know what is. And I think it's going to make this experience a lot easier for people if just living from that may be truth, that may not be truth, and I don't really need to. Mm-hmm. I don't really need to know. Like, why does it matter? Certain things, it does not matter. And we don't really need to get hung up on things as maybe we used to when truth wasn't changing so quickly.
Yeah. I think so much is being revealed and truths or the truth that the truth has been hidden from us, maybe, you know, because then we are able to be controlled, as you said. And like, whenever I hear that word controlled, I just get this kind of like, you know, picture in my mind of the course of somebody's lifespan. You know, as you say, we go to school, we're kind of taught in a certain way, we're given a set of ideas of how life should be. to me, I always see it as like, it's like a handful. Here's a handful of options. You've got to choose one. You know, mind then contorts to be like, okay, I've got to fit within this framework. I've got to go to university. I have to get a degree. I have to get a job. Then I have to like buy a house. I'm going to find my partner in life and I'm going to have children. Then I've got to raise those children to do the same thing, go to university, blah, blah, blah. You know, and all the while keeping up with the social trends to buy these things, have this size house, this, you know, kind of car, these kind of clothes. Like, I just can't help but look at that picture and be like, again, that is, if we look at the truth of life, that's a tiny little pinpoint on the map of what all of this life can be as well. And yet, who does that benefit, right? Who does that benefit? It benefits all the people that make the stuff that we buy. It benefits, you know, the top structure that wants to keep society going. The people in there that are associated, that have the monopoly on the money that provides, you know, the bulk of the things that help make those other things we buy. Like, I actually have a hard time admitting that that's true, that that's real. I don't enjoy, you know, believing that evil exists in the world or that there are, you know, bad intentions. It really gets me all funny on the inside. But, you know, the more that we are, these truths and these things are changing, the more we're realizing that that is actually how it is. I'd like to then believe the intention originally wasn't to have this kind of level of power and control. It was maybe, and I could be totally wrong, it might have been power back in the day then, probably was, because it was, you know, taxing people for the rich to get richer. And really, has that changed? Has it changed? Right. It is a power structure that has been in place for hundreds of thousands of years, not hundreds of thousands of years, but thousands of years.
Depends on the history that is the truth.
Well, the current we've been told.
Love that can of worms.
But then exactly like that is what we are seeing now. And this is a major truth that's being revealed. And it's uncomfortable to see. You know, I'm struggling with it because I feel that discomfort, it's because it's breaking apart outside. So it's breaking apart within me. And that feels kind of destabilizing, right? Like to see these bigger truths and to then maybe allow yourself to hold them and admit them. That's where my discomfort comes from, is like, oh, that's actually what's going on here. And, you know, there's a fracturing that happens within our psyche, within our mind, as we really, really see that. And it feels a little bit like no man's land when you admit that truth. Well, where do I stand? What's real? What's going to happen? And then, you know, our own natural fears of survival kind of kick in. But as we keep saying, like, this power structure is being exposed and it's kind of grappling for its control. And because things are changing so fast, it's not really able to hold that with a sense of like, I'm the authority anymore, because more and more is coming to the surface, that truth, the workings behind this machine. And so that's what's causing this breakdown. And that's why it's important for us now to really cultivate that discernment through this instability, to just navigate this rapidly changing time. And, you know, as you said there, like, it's really this journey of coming back in to what feels right to us, what feels aligned to us, what are those values, so that we can find a place to feel steady while things change. And again, it makes me think about that alignment then with others and, you know, how this time is also helping us be in resonance with others, where, you know, we're coming together with the same sort of ideas, you know, and the importance of the awakening journey to find our people, because it just feels to me like as the big stuff crumbles, we've got to find those people, because we're stronger in those communities to weather these changes, but then also to be these seeds of change in these larger groups where we do come around a common theme and a value, where this is what we want in place of these structures when they finally do topple, and we can begin to cultivate them even in smaller groups, you know. And how this is all going to turn out, we don't know, but that feels like a grounding force to me, to find our people and, you know, be so aligned internally to our own personal truths, that that's really what's going to help us through these destabilizing times.
Yeah, I think you said that really well. yeah, we are, in a nutshell, we are coming to see where we've outsourced our power, where we've allowed a small number of people in this world to control things for all of humanity. And we are beginning to see those, as you're speaking, nice whack-a-mole, where it's like these truths are being revealed so quickly that they can't, they can't hide them anymore. And so it's, you know, some people aren't seeing it, but many are, as incongruencies, inconsistencies continue to be revealed. And it's really this journey back inside to our power. Where is our power? And no longer is it going to be a small handful of people that controls the whole world. Right? It's and so therefore, yes, we do have to come and reestablish some structures, aligned structures of humans that we are going to build things with, because we can't do this alone. I think the old structure of a few people controlling, generally, like relatively speaking, a few people controlling everything, we can go it alone. And I think that intentionally we were meant to be isolated. So because we're more easily controlled and we're isolated. And so we're having to relearn how to live in harmony with our human beings in our proximity, in our geographical proximity, or the people that we are aligned to vibrationally. And so maybe that's not just locally, but it can be through the internet. Like, you know, we have this connection here and we're connected to other people on the internet. So finding aligned people to build the things and allowing ourselves to disconnect, disentangle ourselves from the structures and the systems that are disempowering, that were put in place to make us feel subservient or enslaved or disempowered in life in general. And those are all, you know, we've talked about it many times before, like finances and economies, education, health. Those are the main ones I can think of. There's more of them. But those are the areas of our lives where if we haven't disconnected from the grid, the main system of doing things, where it hasn't felt like it makes sense to us, where we're just kind of, I see along, I would love to do it that way, but I can't. And that's like this disempowered kind of victim state where it's like, I cannot leave my captor, my abuser that's telling me I am dependent upon them. And I'm not like trying to be judgmental or not have compassion for people, but it's that awakening process of, yes, you do have a choice. It's not going to be easy, not necessarily going to be easy, but there is a choice to start to reclaim power. And it can be done in really small ways to begin with until you're able to do it in bigger ways. And it can be a gradual process where you start to disentangle from the system to begin to live in greater alignment and with greater empowerment. And, you know, it's connecting with people who are living this in a way that feels more true to you. And it's a gradual process. It's not always a quick process. It can be gradual, but it's beginning to see, it's like, well, this doesn't feel right to me. And I'm no longer going to work to no longer be beholden to these systems that are trying to control us. And I think beginning to see how we're manipulated to stay within the systems, like that is a big start to that process.
Yeah. And then, you know, I want to just read a couple of things here for, like, you know, ways we can begin to, if we haven't started to think about discernment, or how we can be practicing it and cultivating it. As we said, it's a muscle that we build. And I think it's, you know, this just like intuition, when you listen to it, you follow it, you'll get some confirmation eventually. That's what fuels the strength of it coming in for you, your trust in it. And then it becomes almost like second nature. Your discernment muscle can be the same, but it really is tuning into your own body. You know, it's that your own breath, tension you feel, starting to be able to sense the energy when something is being told to you, shown to you? What is your physical reaction to that? Getting curious about those sensations and that information to figure out what that means for you. Does that mean move towards it or move away from it? Does that mean question it, or does that feel like truth? What does truth feel like for me in my physical body? Getting a greater awareness of that. You know, something you can even ask is, what is the frequency of this message? You know, that's again leaning into that, the energetic feelings of that. But it's also, you can think about the frequency of this message, right? Is this trying to incite fear in me? Did I feel fear? Did I feel like I went into my head and I started to worry about things, or gets, you know, into that worst case scenario thinking, or anger or hate, or what was it? You know, what is the frequency of this message? Being really, you know, proactive about what you are consuming. It's, you know, big one we keep saying, like, that news media is, I think it's gone beyond even a slither of the truth to, it's just like pure fear story. And like, you know, I don't know. I watch it sometimes when I go back to Australia, because it's all on the TV when it's my family's homes. And I just like, what is this? What is this? Like, you got to turn this off. Like, I don't even understand what it is. Just turn that off. You know, like, what are the things that you're consuming? But really trusting those, that inner guidance and those inner whispers. What else would you add to that, Amanda, for people really wanting to like build their own discernment muscles?
So in addition to that, it's recognizing that there are all these mechanisms built in to disconnect us from our bodies, right? And so the pace of life, the stress of life, the food. So taking time to simply connect with our nervous system, breathe. I think that's such a powerful and simple way to reconnect with our body that we can do at any time. And yet it's like, why isn't everyone doing this? Because like the pace of life gets us out of that. We forget about it, or maybe we don't recognize how powerful it can be. But really starting to honor the connection with our body, because that is our way to know what is truth and what isn't, is through our body. And so we have to definitely see where we are not caring for our bodies, just because it is, that's become part of it. It's the default is to make that hard, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I would say that connecting to our body, and then really just being aware of, how does our body feel when we see something, when we hear something, and paying attention to our, you know, you mentioned earlier, reactivity. So how are we being triggered by something? And if we observe that, if we kind of like zoom out and like see what came up for us as a result of reading something or seeing something, we can sometimes begin to see what is the motive behind this message based upon what is a trigger within us. And so getting familiar with our triggers and allowing ourselves to be with our triggers when they come up, because a lot of times those are opportunities for us to clear something that we're holding within us that is part of like the greater collective, but is something within us as well. So using it as an opportunity to process and heal and release. And so that's all I'll say about that.
Yeah. I want to say too, just to back up on body, like that is actually the place and how we can feel a sense of groundedness. It's through our body. It's being in our bodies. So that's going to be a stabilizing force for us. And the more we can become comfortable with being in our bodies is where we'll feel the sense of safety as well. And I know there's a lot of pathways that need to be healed to feel safe in our bodies, but that's part of the work. And then also be willing to ask for more. Ask for more information. Don't just stop at what you receive. Like, you know, like you said before, there's this great quote, we know what we know, we know what we don't know, but we don't know what we don't know. Right? Like, we don't even know what we don't know. So don't assume that anything that you ever hear or read or receive is it, because it's not. It's a tiny little pinpoint of something. What else is here? What more could I know about this? You know, yeah, just remember, it's not the whole picture. Nothing is ever the whole picture. So if we can hold that as a truth, you know, everything that we're allowed to take our hands off, okay, well, what more could there be here? What more can I understand, feel, know, see? You know, be willing to ask that question you know, and zoom out and find different perspectives. And if you feel so called, be the researcher, discerning that research as well, because again, everything is a filtered through somebody. It's a perspective. It's influenced by their history, their conditioning, their programming, their knowing, their what they believe. So take everything with that big grain of salt, you know, not just a grain of salt, but a big one. You know, remember, we're all imperfect humans in this world trying to get by. So nobody holds the key to truth, to absolute truth. And I think,
from
Amanda. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's what I'd say there as well.
Well said. Yeah. I hope this is a good conversation, and hopefully that it's illuminated this topic for those of you listening. And anything else you want to say?
You know, just that if you have comments, we love that feedback, your experiences with discernment, any of that, leave us comments on YouTube or on our website. And we just thank you so much for listening. We'll join you in the next episode.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to your favorite podcast platform or to our YouTube channel so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. Be sure to head to our website, theawakeningconversations.com, for the resources mentioned in this episode. Here, you can also leave your questions, comments, or feedback so we can create more episodes that you love. And if you'd like to be a guest to share your own awakening journey with our listeners, or you have a business or offering that supports others going through their awakenings, head to our website, theawakeningconversations.com, and click on Be a Guest, and we'll be in touch. Until next time, take care.